Accession number 15562, Reel 1.
Commander Jackson, Reel 1. When and how did you come to be in the services originally, please?
Well, I think when I left school, most of my friends and I had a feeling for the country and the empire as it was in those days, and especially for what it had meant to us as youngsters growing up. And we had a certain loyalty, which I think is missing nowadays. And although I wanted to join the Air Force, I did not apply myself sufficiently to work and failed the Cramble exam. But on leaving school, with a friend of mine, I joined the 28th London Regiment, the Artist Rifles, and enjoyed the Territorial Army. I enjoyed its camps, and I enjoyed shooting at Bisley. And in due course, my company commander recommended that I take a commission, which I did, and that made life even more enjoyable. In the Artists, all the officers came up through the ranks anyway, and one was accepted, even though one had officer status. Most of our riflemen and privates were Lloyd's underwriters and stockbrokers and men of much more experience of life than I.
I think we should say this was 1935 that you joined.
I left school in 36, actually.
Had you expected in the latter half of the 30s that a war was coming?
Oh, yes. It was pretty obvious. We were mobilized, actually, during the for the night when the Munich crisis was coming to a head. And we all spent the night in the drill hall at Euston Road, which was the headquarters of the Artists at that time, assembling Bren guns and things of that kind, expecting that the crunch was going to come, as indeed the country thought, any moment. It was only the trip of Chamberlain to visit Hitler and coming back waving a bit of white paper which gave us the extra time to prepare for the 39 conflict. So I didn't want to be in the infantry particularly. I'm not very good at walking. And so that when the Admiralty, in their great wisdom, threw open the Short Service Commission A branch, Air branch, I applied and was accepted on number 4 course, which meant that I joined the training ship HMS Frobisher in January 1939.
What were your experiences aboard the Frobisher?
Well, they were very different from what one had hoped. One was chased around a lot more, of course, as one always is. We had to be a midshipman until we were 22 years of age. And I was 20 in 38. I was 21. I was 22 minus a few months, but I had to go in as a midshipman until my 22nd birthday. It was all excellent training because, A, it was rather like going back to school. Having risen to a certain rank, you were then brought up the round turn and sent back to being a sprog again, which I think is excellent for anybody, and that again is sadly lacking these days. But my memories of Frobisher, as far as I really recall, were excellent. I enjoyed every minute of it. Gave one fresh air and sailing, quite a lot of class work, a lot of it looking back completely useless, of course. They were working on the principle of the fleet actions in those days and the A to Z line and all that nonsense, which one never met up with. The dockyard at Portsmouth, of course, was chock-a-block with warships. The Warspite was being reconstructed, and many more were being brought up to scratch. But after a short while, of course, one went to flying school, which the basic flying was on tiger moths at Gravesend. And in the meantime, we lived in the college at Greenwich and used to go out each day to Gravesend, where we were taught the basic principles of flying and getting our first solo, having to pass a test. Where a naval lieutenant commander used to come round and give you the test, and so long as you passed it, you went on up to, in our case, number 7 flying training school at RAF Peterborough, where we transferred to Hawker Hart, Hawker Audex, and the Hart trainer, which was then a standard training plane for the RAF.
This is about 39-40, is it?
We were at Peterborough on the Sunday morning when war was declared, which was September the 3rd, 39, and we were just going into senior term then, so we must have gone up to Peterborough in, I suppose, July of 39.
Did you have any problems learning to fly?
No, I didn't, in fact. I thought possibly I might, but I found it... I went solo in 7 hours, which I think was fairly average, and I found that the flying the more powerful Harts and Audax was great fun. No, I enjoyed aviation. It's... silly to say you take like a duck to water and something of that kind, but no, it wasn't difficult, and I thoroughly enjoyed every minute of it. After the RAF, we left Peterborough in the winter. The war started, and we left in the winter of 39-40 and went down to Gosport, or some of us did, to the torpedo training school, where we used to learn how to drop torpedoes from the Swordfish in the Solent. And then we did our deck landings training up at Donibristle in Scotland, and from there travelled by train down to the south of France during the Phoney War to join HMS Argus for the actual deck landing itself, in which I remember we had to do our first landing as passengers in a gypsy moth, which was rather like a tiger moth, a very light little aeroplane. You did the first landing on that, and then you were pushed into the Swordfish, in my case, and off you went and did your 4 or 5 landings. And there again, they weren't difficult. After which, the only incident that I remember then was that we went into Toulon, the French naval base, and running for the last boat one evening, I tripped over one of the stepping stones in the cobbled streets and broke my ankle, which... resulted in my being watch on, stop on the quarterdeck for the next fortnight until my ankle became usable again. I then came home, and my first appointment was as an instructor to the torpedo school again at Gosport, showing new naval aviators how to drop torpedoes. It was a job I'd been doing some months before. Why I got that job, I've no idea, except that I used to enjoy hurtling down from high altitude and levelling out over the sea, and might be because I did rather better than somebody else. But anyway, it saved me from going to join the newly formed naval squadrons, which were facing up to the Hun, because although the Phoney War was still on, it very soon became evident that the German advance through France, which took place later and caused a great many casualties to the army and the air force, and indeed to naval squadrons who went in to fill the breach with the air force. And a squadron I later joined, 825, was one of these. They actually went down to Detling in Kent, and during the evacuation from Dunkirk, they flew over the beaches and tried to look like gladiator fighters, which a swordfish is a little difficult to imagine. Fortunately, I'm told, the large smoke cloud over Dunkirk saved many of the chaps from being shot down by Messerschmitts. But indeed, the squadron was decimated, losing its own CO, Lieutenant Commander Buckley, who was later was taken prisoner but eventually shot by the Germans, escaping to Sweden, and several other chaps. I was then up at Abbot Cinch as an instructor, but was sent down as a replacement and joined 825 just at the end of the Detling period, when we went to HMS Furious in Scarpa Flow. And I joined Lieutenant Commander Esmond and 825, and we then carried out the shipping patrols up and down the Norwegian coast. The Germans at that time were in Norway and were bringing iron ore down through the leads off the coast of Norway, and our job was to go and infiltrate and try and sink some of these merchant ships. We also used to bomb or carry out attacks against such places as Tromsø and
Narvik.
Tromsø, but
Trondheim.
Trondheim. Yep, Trondheim. Trondheim. Yep. And I had one occasion was just Esmond. Led a subflight, or at least, yes, I was in Esmond's subflight at that time. We had long-range tanks. I used to fly off Furious, and the ship would return or go as fast as it could back towards the Shetlands, and we would carry on and then fly straight back to Hatston on our long-range tanks. On this particular occasion, I remember we found a merchant ship, and we flew round it. There was no air opposition, and the chaps on board the ship sort of waved at us and then began to lure a lifeboat. So we gave them time to take to the lifeboat, and then we proceeded to bomb the ship, which I think Esmond dropped his in a stick of bombs, which missed. Willie Aston, who was the other subflight member, who was a Royal Marine, and myself, chose to drop the bombs individually, which obviously damaged the ship, which then ran on a rock. Meantime, the chaps in the rowing boat were pulling for the shore and waving like mad, and as I flew over, I remember the captain raising his bowler hat.
How did you know it was German rather than Norwegian?
It wasn't. It was a Norwegian ship. No, no, they weren't Germans. They were using the Norwegian ships. That's why they were disposed well towards us. And then we came, of course, had to find our way back to Shetlands. Willie Aston and I found that we were leaderless at that occasion. I think you'd better leave that out, because of course, switch off...
About which month would it have been that you made that attack on that ship, do you think?
Well, I don't know, but my flying logbook's upstairs, if you want me to be more precise. Anyway, the the Furious did that job, and also we did convoys, protection to troop ships going out around the Cape. We used to escort them down as far as Freetown in flying anti-submarine patrols. This carried on until, this would be 1940. Christmas Day of 1941, I remember rather well, because my observer, Lieutenant Beryl, and myself were detached from the squadron, and we were in the Argus doing anti-submarine patrols for a convoy which was taking RAF squadrons out to Gibraltar. And on the Christmas morning, I remember that I was standing on the quarterdeck talking to Captain Roberts, who was a Royal Marine, and we suddenly, through the rather unpleasant weather, saw the flash and heard the whistle of shells, and the convoy was being attacked by, I think it was the Hipper, but it was one of those German heavy cruisers, and all pandemonium broke loose. In my Swordfish, we only had depth charges. And I was called up to the bridge. The captain wanted to go and drop depth charges against the Hipper, which fortunately we had an admiral on board who was replacing the then admiral in Gibraltar, who unfortunately had allowed the French battleships to pass through the straits and was being replaced. And the admiral thought this would be a bad idea, and that depth charges were no weapon to use against heavy cruisers. But we had no torpedoes in the Argus, but the Furious, which was also in the convoy, did have. So in the face of a raging gale, I had to take off and land on the Furious to take on a torpedo. And then I was supposed to do my duty. By this time, of course, we'd all dispersed, and in the driving rain and half a gale which was blowing, the Hipper had retreated anyway, because she had been engaged by HMS Edinburgh, which had come out from Gibraltar 2 days before. So we never saw her again, but we eventually got into Gibraltar without loss, although I'd spent my time rounding up a few merchant ships which had gone off on their own.
You've got your logbook in front of you, and you're able to put some dates on what you've just been saying, please.
Yes, well, I see from the logbook that I joined 825 in July of 40, and the Norwegian coast, the first account of any dates there was the 7th of September, when my subflight under Lieutenant Commander Esmond attacked the merchant ship in the Leeds on the 7th of September. We then returned to Scarpa Flow, and the next time we went across to Norway was on the 22nd, when we did a night attack on Trondheim, and according to the logbook, we met quite a lot of opposition in the form of flak from the ground, although no air opposition. After that, we carried on the usual patrols up and down the Norwegian coast, but we then went into Tromsø. We went into Tromsø for another night attack later in October, when I got a note in my logbook that a lot of flak fire bombs seemed to explode around hangars and many fires started. Again, this was a night attack, so we were getting quite a bit of experience of night flying from a carrier, which always adds to the excitement of landing on, especially when it's a dark and rainy night. After this, we seem to have had a fairly easy time until I was detached to go on a convoy in HMS Argus to Gibraltar. And it was on Christmas morning of this, 1940 that we were attacked by a Hipper class cruiser. And because there was no torpedoes in the Argus, and the depth charges were not considered suitable weapons to have drop against a cruiser, I had to fly across to HMS Furious, also in the convoy, where I could get a torpedo. It landed on, I remember so well, that the wind strength down the flight deck, which of course was very much stronger because she was going like a bat out of hell, and one could only fly low over the flight deck and hope your hook caught the wire. The wind strength was very strong, and eventually, having got a torpedo underneath, we had lost contact with the Hipper, which had been attacked in turn by the by HMS Edinburgh, who received a shell in her A turret for her trouble. After that, we rounded up the stragglers in the convoy and arrived in Gibraltar sometime about the 28th, 29th of December. I mean, according to my logbook, I came back in August and flew off to Campbelltown on the 14th of January, 1941. The squadron then, I rejoined 825 Squadron at Evanton, which is near Inverness, and there we were doing training, a lot of it in support of army landings, if I remember correctly, army cooperation, later also in from Abbot Finch. In March of 41, Furious again, our carrier. We went as anti-submarine patrol for a convoy, a large convoy, going round the Cape. And also in the Furious, we did have RAF Hurricanes in crates, so that our searches with our aircraft were kept on the flight deck, and we did the anti-submarine patrols until we got to Takoradi, which is the west coast of Africa, where we flew ashore with torpedoes as an anti-striking, as a striking force, in case of the two German battlecruisers, then known to be in the southern Atlantic, made their appearance. Our job also was to fly the RAF officers back on board the Furious so that they could take other Hurricanes ashore. On one occasion, I remember only too well that I couldn't get my hook down when approaching Furious, and after warning the chaps in the back, I landed on without use of the wires and looked round and see two rather frightened RAF officers halfway over the side of the airplane almost as soon as we touched down. Of course, there was no problem landing on because one used your brakes a bit harder.
Now, We're now coming up to May 1941 and the attack on the Bismarck. Can you tell me how you first got the news of the Bismarck breakout, please, and what you were doing?
Yes, it was a sight I shall always remember. We'd been out of Scarpa Flow training or giving deck landing training to some of our new RNVR replacements in the squadron. And on our way back, it was a delightful evening. The sun was going down with broken cloud, and coming towards us down the Pentland Firth at full speed were two wonderful sights, the Hood and the Prince of Wales. The Hood I shall always remember. She was wet and glistening grey with water, the waves in her bow breaking on each side, and they went past at high speed. And obviously one knew something was up. When we got into Scarpa, the captain and Lieutenant Commander Esmond were called across to the flagship, Jack Tovey, briefing them that the Bismarck was known to be out and was suspected to be coming either through the gap between Iceland and Shetland. But I think at that time Norfolk had picked her up. Norfolk and Suffolk had picked her up on their radar. Anyway, we steamed out ourselves with the cruisers and destroyers. And as one has read so many times, the chase of the Bismarck had actually begun.
We should say you were in Victorious.
I was in, or well, the squadron was in Victorious, which was not our carrier. And we were only in her to escort and cover another convoy down to West Africa. At that time, the Victorious was brand new. And the homing beacon, which she carried, could not be picked up by our rudimentary gear, which was based on the old Furious. This comes into the story a bit later on. Anyway, we went at full bat across the Atlantic. And as is now well known, we flew off at about 10 o'clock, or just after, on the night of the 24th, 25th. I remember this particularly well because my birthday is the 25th of May. And as we eventually got to the Bismarck, and had lost our altitude because we came down below the cloud and were directed to her by the Prince of Wales, we lost the essence of surprise, and our attack had to be carried out by Bismarck knowing our whereabouts, and a lot of nasty things were bursting all around the ship, the aircraft. And just as we went into the dive, my observer, Dapper Beryl, tapped me on the shoulder.